Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Now a brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706 399 5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome again to Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum. And before we get started, I want to do a radio check, as we always begin our show with checking to make sure that our broadcast is going out. So I'm going to ask my co-host, who I welcome, and this is Mr. Bianchi, and I just want to do a quick radio check. How are you able to hear me, sir?
Oh, you're pretty good, Mr. Washington.
Okay, great. Well, my new studio microphone seems to be a good investment, seems to be working fine. I also want to welcome the panelists that I see have joined us, Sheikh John Kenan Bey and Brother Warren. And I just talked with Dr. Calvin Nobles about 10 minutes ago, and he should be joining us in just a few minutes. And hopefully we'll have others who will join us tonight for the conversation that we're going to have. I do want to announce the topic, and then I want to give the number out to those who are listening via the internet. But the topic that I've chosen tonight, we don't have to stop, or we don't have to stay on this topic. You know, as we've said many times, that anyone that wants to introduce a new topic is free to do so. But I do like to start the show up with a topic that I'm familiar with that I can at least give some conversation about to get things started. And then if you want to move on away from this, that's perfectly fine. But the topic that I've chosen to at least start the show with tonight is, what do you think? What do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, January 6, 2021, and, you know, before we get started, I'm going to ask our co-host to start off with the response, but before we do that, I want to just make an announcement that we send our prayers forth, we send our condolences forth, and our hearts go out to the families of those five people, I hear it's five at this point, who lost their lives at the U.S. Capitol this past Wednesday. In particular, the Capitol Police officer who was only there trying to do his job to protect our nation's monument, the United States Capitol building, and all that it represents. So to the officer, we are sad to hear about that loss and all those others that died, but we definitely want to express our condolences to his and the other families. Now, the audience that's listening via the internet, I'm sure you may have some thoughts. This has been on the news since it happened on Wednesday afternoon. It hasn't stopped being on the news, so you may have something you would like to say about it. So the number to call is 657-383-0671. We encourage you to call. Let us hear your thoughts. So we'll repeat that number in just a few minutes. But the number is 657-383-0671. So let's go ahead and get started. So, Ms. Bianchi is our co-host. We're going to have you kick off the show, if you will. So what do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol this past Wednesday?
Well, sad, but eventful. hate to see people get hurt and lose their lives. We've been looking at this type of thing all summer long. Hopefully it's not going to be the norm and more like the exception. But I think you said it all.
Okay. All right. Well, I do want to say this to get things moving along. I just was watching Reverend Al Sharpton on the MSNBC. He has a program that he's hosting tonight concerning politics in the United States. That's not the actual title, but that's what the topic is. And I just happened to hear him say the term barbarians at the door. And being a history scholar, a history, university history professor, and a history scholar, I teach world history, ancient civilization, all the way up to the modern times. And of course, without giving a history lesson, you know, there was a time when Rome was the premier state in the known world, at least in the civilized world of the West. And I've been to Rome many times, and there's some wonderfully impressive monuments of that high level of civilization that existed in Rome. But there was a period of time right before the what was called the Islamic period, which started around 700 AD, a couple hundred years before that. There was a period of time when people from the more barbaric tribes up in Northern Europe got restless. They had been, in some sense, provoked by the Roman expansion. You know, Rome was an imperialistic expansionist nation. Julius Caesar had gone up into that area and attempted to conquer those people. And so at some point they decided to repay the Romans and come back and conquer them. And so these people who were called barbarians flooded into Italy and made their way all the way to Rome and sacked the monuments, sacked the libraries, burned books, tore down edifices that represented the achievements of the great Roman Empire. So when I heard Reverend Sharpton say barbarians at the door, referring to what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, it brought those scenes from ancient history to mind, because in many cases, America has been compared to ancient Rome in terms of its power, its dignity, its world influence, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't know if it's a 100% accurate comparison, but it doesn't seem to be far from it, in my opinion, what we saw happen. So thank you, Mr. Bianchi, and we're going to move on around the family room and ask Sheikh John Kenan Bey, who I see is joined us, what do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday?
First of all, I would like to say good evening to everyone. A couple of things stood out to me. Well, I think in terms of scripts, I think in terms of some in the past, the Civil War, but they compared it all the way back to 1812. If I understand, the Capitol actually was burned down at that time. What was taking place at that time, and what state was democracy and how threatened it was at that time, and what was done to secure it, wherein it was many, many years before it was threatened that level again. So But the most curious thing is about what anyone know about the history of that first event at the Capitol when his axe was burned down. I'd like to hear your comments on that web. Different ones have to say about that. We can go on to make comments and reference that. Are we
okay? All right. Thank you, Sheikh John Cannon Bay. We're going to go around, and after you hear some more conversation about it, you may want to expand. But do you want to make any more comments about it before we go to our next panelist?
Well, 1812 was the war that the events have been written about in a number of ways. One, it makes reference to the color red in reference to a tree. And we also make reference to our vine and fig tree. And that tree that it represents is what is called the cherry tree. And the one who was championing that event was a general by the name of George Washington, which was a head of the army. So who was opposing army at that time? And is the story written in a way to cover up what actually occurred? We know that there was a battle that took place in Battle Creek, Michigan, 1812. And we do know that some of the fighters, the warriors, was native to this land. But who is native to this land has been obscured over the years. The leader of that war, the Battle of 1812, was a brother by the name of T. Compte Bay. He had a brother that they call the Prophet, was so upset about what occurred until he put a curse on the office of the United States of America. And that curse was that every president that was elected in office, ending with a zero, would die in office, something would occur to him. And that held up until the time of Reagan. So these events and the historical significance is it an opportunity to revisit the occurrence and added information about the way history is written and the way it's understood and taught.
Okay, well, that's great. That's very instructive. We appreciate it. So thank you. We'll come back around to you, Sheikh John Cannon Bay. We appreciate that. And we'll go to the next caller, but I have to apologize. I'll try to remember, and usually I'm able to connect phone numbers with names, but I'm going to ask you to go ahead and, if you would like, identify yourself. But this is our caller from the 562 area code, and the last three digits of your phone number, 515. And so we would like to hear your comment. What do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday?
I just am very disappointed in Trump. I know this, what transpired had to do with him. I really believe that this was something that was planned. And I just am very disappointed at how it was handled by the police department. I'm just very disappointed about this entire thing. And I feel that with the rest of the world watching, that's definitely going to put us in danger.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is my niece, Sister Bernadette. I have such a great admiration for your ability to clearly see things and express them very, very articulately. So thank you very much. And now, Brother Warren, we're certainly happy to have you with us tonight, as always. And Brother Warren, what do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday?
Well, I come on here as a patriotic American looking to root out those elements that have fostered, nurtured this behavior. The United States government died on January 6th, Wednesday. It died. All of our lives growing up in this country, we're told to prepare for the invasion of the foreign enemy, the Russians, communism, Cuba, Iran, Syria, Palestine. We're told all of these people are a threat, and we have to be prepared to deal with them. But the whole world saw that the element that's willing to take down America are the very same white nationalist forces that propagate patriotism and love for the Constitution. The biggest buttholes in all this are the black people who went on out to the world to promote Trump on black people. They should be walking around with bags on their heads. They have no credibility, no sense of analysis. They're losers. I often engage on this Blog Talk Radio forum with many of the hosts who have shows, these conservative shows. Some let me call in, some let me chat in the chat room. I knew this was coming because they talked about it. In fact, one show on Monday, the person said something big is going to happen. What you have going on here is you have the white people are paralyzed on what to do. Now, you bomb Afghanistan, you bomb this country, you bomb that country. Are you going to bomb these white nationalist groups in the camps they got where they're playing soldier, where they're making chemical weapons, napalm? I mean, when you see people, see, this, you can't compare this to the protest for the summertime, because these people breach the most sacred space of the United States government while a joint session of Congress is being held with the vice president in there going in looking to kill people. This is an invasion. This is an attempted coup incited by the sitting commander-in-chief. And then the people are paralyzed what to do. They don't know what to do. That's the strange part about all this. Now, what you have been going on here is Trump has brought two American elements to his character. One was the Northeast Dixon ward boss politics, like you had in New York in the 19th and 20th century, where they hired goons and thugs to go out and intimidate people. That's one of the dynamics he brought to his personality. And the other was the Southern segregationist personality, Strom Thurmond, George Wallace, Ross Barnett, Governor Fathers of Arkansas. He created an image with these two forces and became a symbolic leader, really, of a white nationalist movement without saying white nationalism. And then he incites the people to do the final thing he wants to do on his way out. Five people get killed. Now, Mr. Washington, my heart don't go out to the five people, because some of the people were the ones who broke in there to go looking to kill Nancy Pelosi and lynch Mike Pence. So my heart don't go out to all the five people that lost their lives. And what's interesting is one of the ladies was killed by a Capitol Police officer. She was one of the rioters who went in and busted in. And when you listen to the comments from some of these people, oh, she didn't have any weapons. That was an overuse of force by police. Isn't that interesting? You're dealing with sick people. You ought to listen to some of these shows, Mr. Washington, some of these conservative patriot shows, and just listen how sick and out of tune with reality they are. And one of your regular callers here often participates with them, give them advice, consoles them. And I'm going to tell you, the federal authorities are listening into these programs here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, I got word yesterday that some of those people, the FBI is on them now. In fact, some of them people didn't even come back on during the week for some of them shows. And so you might be looking at a civil war between the elements of whites who got to maintain this republic, and they finally got to show if they have the guts to go and wipe out these white nationalist groups that have been allowed to fester, have camps, buy weapons, create bombs that the federal authorities know about because they got them monitored and they got informants and agents inside their ranks. You know, after the Civil War, Mr. Washington, you had all these former Confederate soldiers created militia groups roaming around the South, killing black people, raping them, intimidating them from voting in the 1860s and 1870s. The federal government didn't do nothing with them, didn't arrest them, didn't put them in jail. And then they festered into the segregations of the 20th century, into the Klan of the 20th century, the re-rise of the Klan in the 1920s. Then the Civil Rights Movement came. Then the FBI goes into a war with the Klan in the 1960s after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Then in the 80s, they emerge again in the form of militia groups. And they have camps all over the country. They're preparing for war. They've been allowed to fester. So the threat is not by Iran. The threat, and then another thing, how are you going to justify your military spending? How can you sit in the face of the world and say we need to have bases here and bases there when your threat is your own white people who are willing to destroy this if they can't have their white nationalist leader? How can you justify military spending now? The United States is naked. And I saw an article the other day with some of the African countries are saying to the United States, now who are the shithole countries now? They have a problem on their hand, ladies and gentlemen. This country, the functioning of this country is dead now. And they have a choice to make. The Biden-Harris have a choice to make. You can't go in with, let's get all along together to appease these people. Let's hear their side of the story. They're showing you what they're willing to do. And they're still making threats, by the way. They're still threatening they're going to do something on Inauguration Day. To the point to where these social media platforms have to shut them down. There's the one they're going to is called Parler, Mr. Washington, P-A-R-L-E-R. Now I understand the Google apps is taking it down from the App Store. And I think Apple might control Parler. They warning Parler about their content because they're afraid Trump may go to that site to instigate his mess. Again, as I move and let others speak, you have black people who have gone before the black community and have courageously urged support for Trump. And what's going to happen in this country? You're going to have a cultural shift. That if you mention Trump's name, it's going to be like mentioning Adolf Hitler. That's what's going to be happening here. And so all those people who promoted Trump are going to be quiet. I'm going to tell you a little funny story. I'm going to go. Little white guy I see at the supermarket, he was pro-Trump supporter. So after the incident, when I went to the store, guess what kind of shirt he had on, Mr. Washington? Say her name, Breonna Taylor. In other words, a lot of these white folk are playing what I call, they're doing a dance called the distant slide. They're pretending like they never knew nothing about Trump. And then you ought to just hear them now. Oh, they're pretending like they had nothing to do with Trump. Will all the Trump supporters please stand up? Please stand up and get your dunce cap on your head. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Thank you very much, Brother Warren. Thank you so much to all of you. We've got about 30 minutes left on the broadcast tonight, and I'm waiting for Brother Dr. Calvin Novus to come, because we have had a conversation about this earlier. And as always, I was impressed with his opinion, and he's just come into the room. So we're going to go ahead and ask him if he would respond. Dr. Novus, welcome to the show. And the topic, as you know, but I'll just repeat it again. And also, before I do that, since we only have about 30 minutes left, I want to let our internet audience know the number to call in, because we'd like to hear your opinion. So the number to call in is 657-383-0671. So please call in and let us hear what you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday. So don't hesitate. We'd love to hear your voice and hear your opinion on this topic. So at this time, we want to ask our dear brother and our fraternity brother, my dear friend, Dr. Calvin Novus, what do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday?
Good evening, everybody. Brother Cabinets, thank you, and everybody else on the line tonight. I really think it was a real travesty. I think it really set our country back many, many years, and it highlighted many issues. And last evening, somebody sent me a social media clip. It was one of the professors of the Afro-American Center out of Princeton, and he said, we can place this on the shoulders of Donald Trump if we want to, but Donald Trump is only the manifestation of the ugliness and the way we are in America. And I thought about that for a long time, and it really resonated with me that he's absolutely right. It doesn't matter who it is. It is a manifestation of who we really are as a country. We got this thing to where everybody got to get a trophy. Everybody has to win. We have to understand that we have to move beyond that. And we, you know, this is really about, it's more than about the election results. This is really about people just wanting to believe in a mindset that don't really exist. And I have to say this, Donald Trump did drive that. He did incite that. But in this country, we have to get back to loving our country and loving one another. And that means accepting everybody for who they are and understand that we are not a white nation. We are a nation of many people. And that's what makes us unique, and that's what makes us special. And because of that, everybody needs to be treated equally on all things, not just some things. We don't need legislation that further divides us. We need to make sure that if we got legislation that divides us, that legislation is rescinded and modified to reflect who we are. And we fight that so much. We fight the truth of what we really are on so many occasions. And it's just absolutely disturbing. From a national security aspect, it's mind-boggling, because it really shows that the U.S. is struggling. We have an internal struggle with racism, with socialism, and every other ism and issue you could think of. And as a national power, we took steps backwards. And it's time for us to focus on what's going on in this country, rather than focus what's going on in other countries, because before we can become a better international neighbor to others, we need to clean up what's happening in this country first. And I do believe if those individuals who did invade the U.S. Capitol was of a different color, the results would have been tremendously different. I do believe that. I believe there was a lot of compassion showed towards those individuals in that Capitol that day, even though personally I believe that incident as a whole was a national level of, it was a national terroristic act internally grown and brewed. And that's how I feel about it. And one thing I do want to say on a positive note, and I end there, is that I really take my hat off to the legislators for going in that night and continuing to do what they set out to do, to make sure that the Electoral College votes were certified and that we was able to move beyond that. And it was a long day, but they did it. And that showed a lot of will and wherewithal to get us past that. But it was necessary to show that no matter what happens in this country, we will have strong resolve and we'll be very resolute about what we're going to do. And this can never happen again. And this definitely needs to be captured in the history books to show who we really are. Thank you, Brother Cadmus.
Thank you, Dr. Nobles. Thank you very much. I just want to make a comment, and we'll start back at the top, so to speak, with comments from our co-hosts. Two things I want to say, because I was glued to the TV during this whole horrific incident. And one of my favorite newscasters, news reporters, is a lady by the name of Martha Raddatz. And she was right there, not inside the building, but out there in the front as people were going into the building. And of course, those who saw what was happening inside the building would have to say that anyone that was not part of that terroristic mob would have had to been afraid for their life. I mean, I saw pictures of the congresspersons hiding behind the desks where they normally are working, doing the business of governing our country. And here they're being forced to take cover on the floor, some of them trying to shield each other because they had heard gunshots. But Martha Raddatz was outside, and I've seen her over the years many, many times in many different situations throughout the world. I have never seen her seem to be as afraid for her life as it looked like she was afraid for her life there at the hands of her own people, her own people. So I think this is a wake-up call for a lot of people now. Malcolm X lost his job as the national representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1963, after he made a statement in New York in public about the chickens coming home to roost when America's president, beloved by so many people all over the world. I was in Korea in 1963, and the Korean people looked up, the young people in Korea looked up to Kennedy because they saw a fresh breath of freedom, justice, and equality being represented by him. Now, I'm not glorifying him. I'm not saying whether he was a good man or not. I'm saying that all over the world he was respected, although there are some side questions about his involvement with the death of Patrice Lumumba and the Congo, with the killing of the Diem brothers in Vietnam. So I won't get into all of that history, but my point is that what we see, because it's not over yet. As I was telling my wife earlier today, this is the first battle of the second Civil War in the United States of America, where the soul of America was at risk in 1861, or the end of 1860, when the slave owners, it wasn't just the white supremacists, because we had white supremacists on both sides in the Union and in the Confederacy. In fact, many people, scholars say that Abraham Lincoln was a white supremacist, because it said that he said that black people would never be the equal of white people. But the fact of the matter is that when he said that he was going to put an end to the expansion of slavery, that's when the Civil War actually began, because that was when the legislature of South Carolina decided to secede. Now, the first shots were fired off the coast of South Carolina, Fort Sumter, a few months later. But when that mindset said, we're no longer going to cooperate in this experiment, as it has been called, to have this great nation, this so-called city upon a hill, that was really the beginning, in a sense, of the Civil War. So this Civil War, this was just like the Fort Sumter. This is like the first shots. It's not over yet. It may be years before, because these people are not going to go back into their holes, into their wilderness camps, take down their tents and their militia camps. The Proud Boys are not going to pack up their arms, their M4s, M16s, whatever they have. No, they're going to get more weapons, because they have more of these attacks on America's democracy plan. So I think we need to prepare for that. We need to prepare for that. But I do want to end my part with this, because I think it's important that we do not disconnect from the real power in the world. We may see these people as having some degree of terroristic power, and some people may fear that state capitals will be attacked, which is part of the chatter that's been out there in their communications network. They're planning to do that. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have a plan. I'm here in Georgia, but about 3 hours from the capital of Georgia, Atlanta. And I wouldn't be surprised, because they have targeted the governor of Georgia, the secretary of state of Georgia, as being enemies of their white supremacy cause, that they might have a plan to attack the capital of Georgia, the beautiful gold-domed capital of Georgia. And you know, it's so terrible that these people are so low class that they would take human feces. I'm not going to use the vulgar colloquial word for it, but we are grown. We know what that word is, the S word, and spread it on the sacred walls representing America's democracy, the capital of the United States. To have that kind of barbaristic mentality, that's a real low. But I'm going to end my part by just sharing something with you. And this is from the book of Job in the Bible. And I think it's important that we make this connection, because if we fail to make this connection, we can look at all of the political, national security issues, racial divide issues, injustice issues, and miss the real point of what's really going on. So I'm going to read this. Please bear with me. It says in the 36th chapter of Job, beginning with the first verse, it said, then Elihu, who's one of the companions of Job, continued saying, be patient with me a little longer, and I will inform you, for there's still more to be said on God's behalf. I will get my knowledge from a distant place and ascribe justice to my maker. For my arguments are without flaw, and one who has perfect knowledge is with you. Yet God is mighty, but he despises no one. He understands all things. He does not keep the wicked alive, but he gives justice to the afflicted. He does not move his gaze from the righteous, but he seats them forever with enthroned kings, and they are exalted. If people are bound with chains and trapped by the cords of affliction, God tells them what they have done and how arrogantly they have transgressed. Let me repeat that. If people are bound with chains and trapped by the cords of affliction, God tells them what they have done and how arrogantly they have transgressed. He opens their ears to correction, and he insists that they repent from iniquity, which is another word from evil doing. If they serve him obediently, they will end their days in prosperity and their years in happiness. But if they do not obey, they will cross the river of death and die without knowledge. Those who have a godless heart harbor anger. Even when God binds them, they do not cry for help. They die in their youth. Their life ends among male cult prostitutes. Male cult prostitutes. And I don't have to explain to any of you what a prostitute is, but that's somebody that illicitly sells themselves, and most of the time for money. It could be other things, but they are members of this male cult. What kind of male cult are we looking at here? I'm saying that. That's not in the scripture. God rescues the afflicted by their affliction. He instructs them by their torment. Indeed, he lured you from the jaws of distress to a spacious and unconfined place. Your table was spread with choice food, yet now you are obsessed with the judgment due to the wicked. Now you are obsessed with the judgment due to the wicked. Judgment and justice have seized you. Be careful that no one lures you with riches. Do not let a large ransom lead you astray. Can your wealth or all of your physical exertion keep you from distress? I'll stop right there. So that's a message that's applicable today to America. Can your wealth and all your physical exertion, your military power, keep you from distress? No, not as long as you harbor evil in your heart, evil against other people that are different color from you, evil against people that are in a different economic or cultural disadvantaged situation from you, et cetera, et cetera. And so I hope that others will hear this, but I think it's more important that our people hear this so that we're on the right side of this river, because this river is a river of blood, and there'll be more blood shed. You saw during the summer people getting shot down like dogs in the street because of their color. And now you see these people going into the sacred halls of Congress with automatic weapons and other type of instruments of death, bombs, and even ties to zip ties to kidnap the leaders of the House of Congress, maybe to kill them, maybe to hold them for ransom. You see a gallows put on the porch of the Capitol with a noose. And who do you think is supposed to be the victim of that noose? They said they wanted to hang the Vice President of the United States. What is happening to America is what Malcolm was talking about when he was saying the chickens always come home to roost. What America had done to the black people and brown people and red people and even the yellow Chinese people out on the West Coast when they were used to build America's Western Railway system and then shunted aside. And even those Mexicans that they brought up to tend to the fields, and you see what's happening today, many of their children can't even find their parents. Parents can't find their children. And for 3 years, these children had to live in cages like animals, sleeping under these aluminum cloth blankets instead of being in nice beds as children should be. So that's my little talk for tonight. We've got about 10 minutes left, and so we'll go around one more time. And we don't have to stop at 9 o'clock, but I had scheduled to do that. But if someone wants to keep going, that's fine. We won't shut you down. You can talk at least for the time that we have bought, which is up until 11 10 o'clock. So we'll go back to our co-host. Mr. Bianchi, would you like to add more comments?
Well, yeah, I could add a lot of comments, Mr. Washington. You know, the Chinese that was hired to tunnel their promissory summit, they were paid. They wasn't slaves. They wasn't work for nothing. Matter of fact, they went on strike for 30 days for more pay, which they were paid more. And they are commemorated. They do a commemoration, a Golden Spike commemoration, where those two trains met, one starting off of the East Coast, the Pacific Railroad. Then you had the Union Pacific that was coming from Nebraska. And the location where the two trains met, they have ceremonies there honoring all the participants, whites, Union and Confederate, former soldiers, blacks, Chinese, and whoever else. That was a heck of a project looking at the time that it went on. And you know, you talk about the capital. You know that's U.S. territory. That's not Washington, a government, Washington, D.C. per se. And it's one of the 12 that associate the Federal Reserve System, and they overlap. But during 9/11, and eight times before that, the Capitol has came under attack. 9/11, Flight 93 that crashed in Pennsylvania. Its projected target was the Capitol building. Somebody mentioned early, the British marched on the presidential residence and burned it. And there's a lot of good history to that. Matter of fact, they was marching from there, going over to participate in the Battle of New Orleans. And on the way, it showed the well-neededness of Americans to be armed, because along the way, you had American citizens that was taking fire upon the British troops as they marched through their areas. And they was a much less of a contingent when they got there than what they were when they left. And British soldiers. You've had gunfights in the Capitol as early as the 1800s. You had bombing in 1915, where you had World War One vets in 1932 that marched upon the Capitol. As a matter of fact, even went inside the building. I know you remember the Weather Underground that set off explosions underneath the Capitol in the 1970s when they was protesting. They was an anti-Vietnam group. They was protesting the Vietnam War. And believe it or not, even Puerto Rican separatists, they invaded the Capitol in 1954 because they wanted to continue to be an independent state. They didn't want to be a part of the United States. And you still see some moves to try to incorporate Puerto Rican into as a 51st state, if my memory serves me right. Then, of course, in your time, in 1983, you had a bombing outside the Senate chamber, and you had members who was claiming to be the armed resistance, and the Army of the Lord. You know, and later on in 1998, you had two capitalist police officers that were shot and killed. And as people was attempting, those assailants was attempting to get at Representative Tom DeLay. So you've had fist fights, wars, fires, bombs, and so on and so on. And what you've seen here this week is just another episode in the chapter. All through the previous nine, the United States have came along, especially after 9/11, and worked and remained strong as we knew it would be. And you know, you made mention about feces being spread on the wall, and you made mention of Al Sharpton. You know what that reminded me of? You remember Tawana Brawley?
I do.
You remember that name?
I remember.
Back in 1987, Tawana Brawley had made a police statement saying that she had been raped and kidnapped by a group of white men in New York. And in her story, they said that the men scrawled racial slurs and smeared feces and left her beside a road wrapped up in a plastic bag. And that made the front pages of newspapers across the nation. And Al Sharpton, Reverend Sharpton, took up her case. And later on, it was found out that it was all fabricated. Now, here's where the lowdownness comes. Because of fabricating her lies, she was ordered to pay one of the men $190,000, and which has grown to over $400,000 at the time of the newspaper article that talked about it. That was on, well, actually, it was on NPR. Up until the time that they talked about this, she had only paid $3,700, but the fine had grown to over $400,000. So she's only paid about 1%. And still to this day, that money is growing, and she still is responsible to pay for it. But Al Sharpton was only charged $65,000. And I guess he got his members of his church to pay that for him. And my question is this. Why come you didn't get your members of the church to pay Tawana's fine also? Because apparently you was going to use her, and if she had won a settlement, you was going to want some of it. I call that being low down and doggish and very despicable. That's me saying that. And, you know, we have witnessed these riots and attacks on government structures throughout this summer. The burning down of the police station there in Baltimore. There in St. Louis, you've had in Central West End, you had riots after the George Floyd case event where you had four police officers shot. These were blacks shooting black police officers. And also, on the opposite side of town, there on Del Mar and Sarah, at the Palm Shot, we had to hear about a retired police officer, a black officer of 38 years, Captain Dorn, when he was investigating the alarm that went off because he knew the people that owned the Palm Shot. He went down there to check it out. And I think he had five young black males, and one of them shot him and left him to die there on the sidewalk in front of the Palm Shop. And when they got through, matter of fact, one was so damn silly, I think he left his credit card in the Palm Shop. They stole TVs and some other things. And when they was getting away, they drove past the front of the Palm Shop, and there was a young man that was talking to Captain Dorn as he lay there dying, telling him to hang on, OG. I mean, come on, OG, hang on. This car full of the thugs and murderers and robbers, they hauled out the window and told that young man that was trying to comfort Captain Dorn as he lay there dying, we'll shoot you, something to that effect. So we've seen a lot of things we thought we never would see these past years with the rioting, the sieging of a city where the mayor refused to bring out the proper
Mr. Washington, can you get back to the subject, Mr. Washington?
Well,
let me tell you something. Hang on for a second.
No, I think
as a co-host, have a right to change the subject. Is that right, Mr. Washington?
No, you don't have a right to change the subject. You're deflecting it further because you're guilty of participating with those people and encouraging what happened at the Capitol.
Okay, I don't want to continue this back and forth because I do want to move on. Ms. Pianki, you're changing the subject, Mr. Washington. What I'm doing is asking Mr. Pianki to wrap up so we can go to the next person because I say we're going to end at 9 o'clock, but I want to go around one more time. I want to go around one more time and let everybody have a chance. Ms. Pianki, would you go ahead and conclude so then we'll go in and hear what Brother Sheikh John Kennebay has to say?
Well, I probably could have been done if you keep letting these people come in and interrupt.
Okay, but let's
That's
move
totally
on.
Disrespectful. And you said this was the last time you wanted to be in at 9 o'clock, and I was trying to end at 9 o'clock.
I understand that, but we can keep.
Well, let me go ahead and finish. You can tell me about that when we talk to each other on the phone.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
But as I was saying before, we've seen this all summer long. And it is a shame that it has to develop, or should I say, sink to this type of attitude. You got people that either act physically as barbarics or verbally as barbarics. And that's just typical of human beings. Sometimes I wonder how much separation between animals and human beings there really are. Go ahead, Mr. Bay.
Okay. Sheikh John Cannon Bay, this is our last go around. So would you like to make a final wrap-up comment on what you've heard or what the topic is about?
Well, what I'd like to do is, from a historical point of view, I did talk about what occurred back in 1814. I'd like to come up to the Civil War. And at the end of the Civil War, the Constitution was amended. And the reason it was amended, I think that there's different interpretation of the reason that it was amended. Well, it is believed the 13th, 14th Amendment had something to do with freeing of slaves. However, there's another perspective based on the fact that the condition or the status of the former Confederate soldiers. They lost the war, the prisoner war, and they voluntarily gave up their citizenship in this country, so they was actually without a country. They weren't citizens of another country. The right thing would be to send them back to their country of origin. But a conspiracy began. I want to be careful using this word conspiracy because it has two sides, like a two-sided coin. But in this case, there was one designed to allow them to stay into this country. The conspiracy was put together after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, similar to a conspiracy was put together after Jesus of Nazareth was crucified and resurrected. So the 14th and 15th Amendment, according to Noble Raleigh, the prophet, said it had nothing to do with the salvation of our people. He said the Southern at that time that was without power, disconnected from the powers the Constitution government, it had to be brought back in, so the 14th, the 15th Amendment made them citizens again. So now, if that had not been done, we would not have this problem we have today. I just said that some food for thought, and we'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you so much, Sheikh John Kennebay. And we're going to move on, Sister Bernadette. Would you like to make our concluding comment as we begin to wrap up for the program tonight?
No, I really don't. I think, actually, I just would say I believe more of what I see than what I hear. And I'm just very disappointed with all of it. And that's pretty much it. I just hope that we don't go into war over this mess. But what can one really say? I don't like how the way the Black Lives Matter, the way the police were out there arresting people, it is a shame to see how very few were arrested and how they handled it differently with these people versus the Black Lives Matter. It's just, I can see a lot of racism. That's all I can say, and inequality. So for me, everything is just such a mess. What can one really do to unravel the mess that has been made, you know? So
okay,
I'm speechless.
Okay,
yeah.
Bernadette, thank you. We're going to move on to Brother Warren and Dr. Novas, but I just want to make mention, because something just came to my mind. I don't know why I had not thought of it sooner, and I'm going to make it brief. But in 1965, in March of 1965, when people from Selma, and not just from Selma, there were people who had come from other places to participate in the march, intended march from Selma to Montgomery. And of course, it's history that these people were viciously beat down as they approached the Edmund Pettus Bridge to proceed on their trek to the state capital of Montgomery. Well, shortly after that, I, along with about 300 other Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University students, we didn't march to Montgomery from Tuskegee. It was about the same distance as from Selma to Montgomery, but we chartered buses and we went to the state capitol. And I will never forget the net around the capitol. They must have had 1,000 armed state police, county deputies, city police from different city jurisdictions, different county sheriff departments. Even had people on horses with cattle prods. And one of the things that came up in the discussion over the last few days, because the fact is, and I was in Washington, D.C. the summer before last, in that same area, and some of the Capitol Police are mounted on horses, and you didn't see any horse-mounted police that were called to the scene, at least in the pictures I've seen. I didn't see any. So the question is, where were all of these people that could have been put there in advance? Because as soon as the government of Alabama heard that we were coming, and we advertised to the news that we were coming, as soon as they heard they were coming, they brought in all of these forces. They didn't bring in the National Guard, but they had the state police and all these other militarized police to make sure that we did not go into the Capitol. Now, we had no intention of desecrating the capital of Alabama. All we wanted to do was have a couple of our representatives deliver a petition to Governor George C. Wallace asking that the people from Selma could be allowed to come and bring their grievances as they had intended to do before they were beat down. But none of this kind of protection seemed to have been in place to protect this sacred citadel of democracy, the U.S. Capitol. So I just wanted to mention that as I was listening, it brought that picture in mind, and I asked the question, you know, where were those people that should have prevented this from happening? So it's almost like, I can't say, but I'm just thinking, it's almost like somebody wanted this horrific show of rebellion against American democracy to take place last Wednesday. So as we continue to wrap up, Brother Warren, I'm going to turn the mic over to you, and we certainly appreciate all of your comments. So you go ahead and take it away.
I'm doing a panel discussion tomorrow on my show. I'm the host of a show called New Orleans Wake Up, and at 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern, I'll be doing a panel discussion tomorrow on what occurred Wednesday. And my number for my show is area code 516 516-387-1933. And Mr. Washington, you will be seen, if you ever saw The Godfather, the first episode, the first Godfather Part 1, you saw at the end where Michael Corleone took out the five families, you will be seeing a lot of whacking going on. You're going to see that as well. And I'd like you to join me in doing your civic duty and calling your federal authorities when you come across someone who you suspect may have been participating or giving aid and comfort to those people who did what they did on Wednesday. As I have said, I have engaged on Block Talk Radio with these shows that label themselves conservative, patriots, constitutional conservatives, and I will be monitoring this coming week. I will be listening. I will make sure I call the federal authorities because a weasel, Mr. Washington, a weasel is a cunning and deceptive person. So we should listen for any. I have heard it firsthand. I'll be willing to testify in federal court. I've heard people give advice, recommendation, suggestions, and comfort on these radio programs to people who plan to do what happened Wednesday. And like the previous weasel, caller, gave a historical list of events that occurred at the Capitol in terms of shooting. Not one of them was instigated by a sitting president, sitting senators, sitting congressmen, as you had occurred on Wednesday. The sitting president instigated, encouraged, motivated the mob to invade the Capitol, as well as his sidekicks in crime, Rudy Giuliani, his son, Senators Ted Hawley or Ted Cruz, and then one of my senators in Louisiana, and at least four of my congressmen here. That has never been done. That has never been done. Never has a sitting president encouraged American people to invade and to do attempted coup and do an insurrection on the American government. That's the distinction. That's the greatest distinction. So the previous weasel, caller, who mentioned those historical things, this is a whole different class of its own. Now, Mr. Washington, we have a black weekly newspaper called the Louisiana Weekly. I picked up the most recent copy today, and there's an article. Clyburn concerned about safety of VP-elect Kamala Harris. And he says, quote, "We have to be more concerned about Harris than any of the other vice presidents in our nation's history," unquote. Clyburn said during a Zoom conference with journalist Richard Prince, Journalism's Roundtable, quote, "that Kamala is the first woman and the first black vice president is an issue that cannot be avoided." So when the Senate seat in Georgia, when those two seats went over to Ossoff and Warmoth, that enraged these people. And the fact that you're going to have a black woman be in the second seat of command, and if something happens to Joe Biden, she would be the president, that got them further enraged. And here goes my concern. We already know now the police departments, all type of law enforcement departments, have elements of white nationalism in it, and we are complicit with the ideas and values of Donald Trump. We see this with the Capitol Police. Does it exist in the Secret Service? Was it a possibility that Biden and or Harris could have been assassinated if this incident had not occurred? So the country's in bad shape. This country, what happened Wednesday means the enemy are the very people who promote patriotism, conservatism, and the Republican Party, Mr. Washington. Look how stained that they're going to be. You have aided them. You know, Lindsey Graham wants to be all this and that. Lindsey Graham, you helped stoke the fire. And those people at the airport who were Trump supporters, who tried to consume you, you're going to be consumed by the flame that you have fed. It's going to be interesting, Mr. Ward. It's going to be like the Godfather Part 1. They're going to start whacking each other. What's going to happen? But y'all look out for those conservative programs here on Blog Talk, and I dare the weasels who regularly call, I'm waiting for you, because the FBI waiting to hear you too. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
But thank you, and I'm going to bring on Dr. Novus in just a second. But I do want to, even though we planned to close 50 minutes ago, but I do want to invite those who have been listening to the conversation in the Booker T. Washington Family Room. If you are listening and you want to say something before we close out very soon, please call us at 657-383-0671. And before I bring it on Dr. Novus, I want to say this because you brought this to my mind. You know, as a community leader on a U.S. Army base for almost 20 years, I have served as a religious community leader at one of the premier military installations in the United States, the Cyber Center of the United States military at Fort Gordon. And we have, for the years that I've been associated with this base, have invited, sponsored, and encouraged different allied nations to send their military officers and, in a very few cases, senior non-commissioned officers, but mostly commissioned officers to attend military training in various areas of military knowledge. And so one day, I may have said this several years ago, I don't think I've said it recently, I received a call from the local defense intelligence agent supervisor, and he asked me if he could interview me, if he could speak to me. And I said, of course. He said, well, I'll come over to your office. But when he came, he did not come alone. He was accompanied by the Augusta, Georgia FBI field supervisor and the Fort Gordon supervisor and agent. And the reason why they wanted to talk with me is because they wanted to make sure that I understood that I needed to come under their guidance of the Army Threat Awareness and Reporting Program if I was going to operate in that capacity on that Army base. Now, the Threat Awareness and Reporting Program, the acronym is TARP, was formerly known as the Subversion and Espionage Program, or the Subversion and Espionage Directed Against the U.S. Army Program. I won't go into the details, all the details about my responsibility or the responsibility of anyone in the armed forces concerning it, but what it really has to do with was something, Brother Warren, I believe you alluded to, and that is, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but reporting and being aware of and reporting subversion, not just espionage, but any type of threats, terroristic threats, against the citizens, U.S. citizens, whether it's on the post or away from the post. So my sensitivity, although it has been heightened for quite a long, long time, because I took a sacred oath when I was 18 years old, and of course that's been nearly 60 years ago, as a member of the armed forces to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So this has heightened my sensitivity that we have probably a greater domestic threat, because they don't have to go through customs. They don't have to avoid detection trying to get into the country to plant bombs in our citadels of democracy or to kill our law enforcement officers. They're already here. They were born here and raised here. And they're not just looking like some of the wild people that you may have seen on TV, like the one guy that had on the helmet like they would have worn back in the wild dark ages with some animal horns on the side. Some of them are professionals. Some of them are college professors. And some of them wear tweed jackets, you know, when they go to university level committee meetings and bow ties. Some of them are physicians. This one lady was killed. She was a veteran of the United States Air Force. You can't just look at the way they dress. Some of them you can see that they are barbarians, but all of them don't dress like that. But they all have one agenda, and that is to keep the black, brown, red, and yellow people under their feet so that they can continue to project and to promote their white supremacist beliefs. And we have to realize this. Now, they're not all the same, but there's so many of them. There was 100,000 people, according to the news reports, that were surrounding that Capitol, and they probably had instructions on who was going to go inside and who was going to stay outside. And they're planning to do this again at the local state Capitol level, according to the chatter that's out there on the internet. So just be aware of this. So we're going to wrap up with Dr. Nobles. So I hope that we've gotten something out of this conversation, and it makes us more aware that there's a lot of work we have to do to protect our nation. And the reason why I want to wrap up with Dr. Nobles, not to disclose anything about his background, because it's his prerogative to tell you.
I got
you
one more bit to add, Washington.
Okay, but you're going to have the last word. We got a process.
Yeah.
You always close out the show. We're not changing that tonight, but I do want to hear from Dr. Nobles, because he has a greater sensitivity even than I do to some of these threats that I just finished talking about because of his career, which I won't go into details about it. So you'll get your chance at the end.
Calvin has a great professional career that he has added to making this country great.
He has. And so
unlike a lot of other people.
We want to bring in Dr. Calvin Nobles. Just a minute, Calvin. But you know what? Before I do you, Calvin, because I see my sister-in-law, Stephanie, just joined. Let her have a chance, and then we'll do Dr. Nobles, if it's okay. Is that okay, Dr. Nobles?
Oh, absolutely. No problem.
Okay. Welcome, Stephanie. We've been on the show now for almost an hour and a half, and our topic tonight is, what do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, this past Wednesday?
Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. Sorry so late. I'm watching one of my favorite shows, Malcolm X, and I forgot it was Saturday. But, well, one thing, I'm glad they showed their behinds, because this is the type of thing we've been talking about all along. There are so many of us that could see it way before now. Way before that man ever ran for president, you could see the signs of this type of thing. So this did not shock me for them to do that. And like he said, it's not over. This is just the beginning. So we need to get them out of there. I'm glad they showed themselves, their true colors, their true horns, so that now the pressure is on more to get them out of there. And, because we don't need that, you know, here in the United States. We can never grow as a people with all that type of hatred, racism, and wanting to hold other people down, stand on people's heads, you know. God put this earth here for us all to grow and to be family amongst one another, to help each other. You know, all that other stuff is of the devil. And so I hope they get what they got coming to them, because they have deserved it. And you kill a fish starting with cutting off the head. We know who that head is. Trump himself. So that's all I'm going to say. I just don't understand what's taking them so long. I know you have to go through certain procedures, but when he gets like this, just snatch him on out of there. You know, he don't need to be where he can push a button and really do some destruction. You know, they just made themselves look bad. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Stephanie. So we're going to go ahead and get ready to wrap up. We definitely want Dr. Novos to give us concluding comments in time. So what do you think about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, Dr. Novos?
I think what happened on Wednesday is indicative of what we've been seeing for decades. That fear factor was extremely high. And what that activity that we saw that was demonstrated was to drive fear. And that's exactly what they want, is fear. But unfortunately, the way they went about it, you know, is extremely shocking to me. It's very surprising to me. And it, what's more shocking to me is how the United States was unprepared to deal with it. Imagine if this wasn't a domestic level incident. Imagine if this was an internationally grown incident and brought to the U.S. soil to carry out more devastation. We were so underprepared. You have to ask the question, why wasn't the Capitol Police prepared? I know they're not the same as the D.C. Metropolitan Police, but they still have to be prepared to defend those entities inside of Washington, D.C., much better than what we saw. I see there was a complete lack of breakdown in communication. There should have been National Guard forces on the standby, ready to react on in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. In fact, I read a piece earlier today where Governor Hogan from Maryland was calling, asking to send the Maryland National Guard in, and they kept telling him no. And because to me, him, the ability for him to do that tells me that he knew that something was going to happen, or he got some intelligence saying there's the propensity for something to happen. And it just showed how unprepared we were, that how unprepared we were as a nation to defend ourselves on our own soil. And of course, the federal government was unprepared in every aspect, but they were extremely prepared during the summer issues that were social issues that we had going on involving Black Lives Matter. That's concerning to me, that you would rather change the posture based on the perpetrators. Our national security can't be at stake or in question ever, regardless who that actor is in this country, whether they're Black, white, Asian, it doesn't matter. Our national security has to be postured in a way that is always protected. There were so many letdowns, that it's just disturbing to me. If we can't defend ourselves at home, it begs, can we defend ourselves abroad when we send forces over there? Because the same leader, the same administration is responsible. It begs the difference how underprepared we are right now. We do need a change, and we need a gross change and shift in how we do business. This can never happen again. If I was the governor of a state right now, I would be in a meeting with my National Guard leaders, my reserve leaders, my military components there, drafting plans. And these plans will have to draw a conclusion where we might have to lay people north and south if necessary, because we must protect our sovereign territory, whether it's a state, whether it's our nation, whatever it may be. We can never have this happening again, this level of fear and disruption. And it's not okay. And we can't sit here and say, you know, we've seen this before. We have never seen it incited by a current administration to this level, where the military was conflicted by this. Because the military is a tool of the civilian leaders. We can never have that in question again. And we were just in a country that was indicated that we've been in total turmoil. And it wasn't a nice thing to see. And for somebody who spent all the most of their lives doing this, to see it go down like this is a shame. We need to rewrite some policies to give Washington, D.C. Metro Police Department more authority so that this would never happen again, to give the military forces the ability to execute without going through certain protocols if something like this was to happen again. We do have military forces there, and they need to be ready to act. Where were the drones and helicopters that we saw during the summer? They were not there this time. So there is a difference between who is the perpetrator. It's a big difference on what the government, the way they respond. Regardless of who that perpetrator is, we must respond with force, very strategically, and very forcefully to show that you will never, ever, ever incite this type of fear again. It can never happen. Those people that work on Capitol Hill, let me tell you, it's been known as the last slave plantation. Those people up there do not make a lot of money. They do it for the love of this country. And the last thing we need to let happen to them again is for their lives to be at stake and for them to be as fearful as they were on Wednesday. We owe them better than that. And I think we're going to see some drastic changes. And it might mean that we might have to wait in long lines to get inside a building we shouldn't have to. But when things like this happen, it impacts the lawful, not the unlawful the most. And with that, I close out.
Well, thank you, Dr. Knowles. We're getting ready to wrap up. We're going to have our co-hosts, as we always do, to give the wrap-up comments. But I want to say this before I turn it over to Bianchi. Dr. Knowles, you will be able to understand this probably more than any others that are listening, but, you know, our Omega Psi Phi fraternity brother, Representative James Claiborne from South Carolina, is one of the main factors why Joseph Biden will be inaugurated president on January the 20th at noon. Had it not been for him essentially taking former Vice President Biden under his wing, he probably would not have become the Democratic presidential nominee. And with that kind of influence that our brother, Omega brother, James Claiborne has, I'm hoping, and it's my intention, to connect with him. I don't know him personally at this time, but I do plan to write to him and ask him to use his influence to keep President Biden on the job of keeping the pledge to defend freedom, justice, and equality for all people, because Joe Biden is a politician. He's been in politics for 50 years. And one thing that I have sensed and studied as a professional historian and teaching history is that often politicians go along to get along. I heard someone say recently that politics is the business of compromise. We don't need compromise when it comes to defending the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and promoting freedom, justice, and equality. So I'm hoping that others besides myself will write to Brother Claiborne and encourage him to push Joe Biden throughout the next 4 years, long if necessary, but for the next 4 years to stay on task to make sure that he fulfills our expectation, because had it not been for the African-American vote in South Carolina to get him to the point of being nominated, and even in the general election, he wouldn't have this opportunity to serve not only our people but the country at large. So I just want to break that up. So we're going to close now. We've had a great
Washington.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask something, Mr. Washington?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Yeah, one of the things on the table is D.C. statehood. Now, the House did pass that legislation. So if D.C. is granted statehood, you're looking at two more Senate seats. So which means you would possibly have, if all of this occurred within the first 2 years, because we don't know what's going to happen in the midterm elections, you would have a solid Democratic control. In the first 2 years of Biden's administration, you should see some of the most robust legislation since Roosevelt. You should see. But again, like you said, these politicians go along to get along, and we know Sleepy Joe kind of does have that history. So we do need to have the Congressional Black Caucus members who have been asleep as well to spring the fire up under them to pressure this president and his vice president to definitely make us part of the priority in their decision, at least for the first 100 days.
You think
and
well, thank you. And I'm going to go ahead and say this and put myself on record, and I am going to continue the work that I've been doing to promote, as I have been doing for over the last 50 years, you know, the rights of our people and all people being involved over the years in the fight for freedom, just and equality for especially our people who've been denied it. But I'm going to contact my fraternity brother, who has a open ear. I hope he has that with President, soon to be President Biden, and use what you just said. Use that as a opener to ask him to fight in the Congress and with other influences that he has with senators and so forth to get statehood for Washington D.C. It's long, long overdue. Thank you. So now we're closed. Ms. Piake, our co-host, has the
Well, I just want to say that D.C. is becoming gentrified. It'll become majority white here pretty soon. And Biden lost South Carolina by 12 points to Donald Trump. In the Zoom meeting that Biden had with some black pseudo leaders, although Clyburn is elected, I think the message that Biden sent to them was, you're going to have to wait under the Hispanics. They twice your population, carry a larger allegiance, and blacks is no longer that major force. Shall I say that a whooping child, and that's just the way it is.
That's a myth.
The population numbers have dropped.
Okay, let me close out now.
Well, Mr. Washington, can you mute people when I'm trying to finish and close out?
Right, right.
They
childish. I hope that we will learn, and that's one reason why I started this show going on 4 years ago, so to help us to be able to learn how to disagree without being disagreeable and common courtesy.
Well,
is that we
generally, that's the way it is, but some people just can't seem to perform that way.
As if they missed something.
Can you mute him, Mr. Washington?
We're still trying. So we thank everyone for listening tonight. God bless everyone. Still stay safe. COVID is raging. It's not diminishing. It's picking up.
I wanted to ask you something about George Wallace.
Okay, but I did say that. I said I've got two calls waiting in the queue for me to make, so I have to go now. But we can pick
up real quick.
We will definitely plan on being here in the family room next Saturday. Hold the points, if you will, and God.
Yeah, bring that up next week. I want to speak on George Wallace, by the way.
Okay, we'll definitely.
I'll talk to you later. I'll be talking to you.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Again, we wish everybody a happy rest of the weekend, and may you all be safe. And thank you for joining us tonight. Good night. God bless you. Gotta make a couple phone calls.
No, there's not, but I just think it's interesting if you see that side come, because there's others out there like
of
him.
Course, of
know,
course.
So you just have to learn.
I saw him at the inside of the Capitol
Hill. We just have to learn how to deal with them. Salam. So I'm a few minutes later than what I had planned, but I don't know if you listened to the show, but it went a little longer. I had planned to stop at 9 o'clock, but my sister-in-law came on late, and I want to make sure she had a chance. But anyway, so yes, you know, I knew Sister Margaret only by telephone. We talked a lot, you know, actually over the phone. I didn't know it like you did, and I thank you for connecting me with her. Because I always felt indebted to her, because when I joined the Nation of Islam back in 1969, she was, as far as I can remember, the secretary that sent out the lessons that we all had to memorize. And of course, she had an article in the Muhammad Speaks newspaper for a number of years that was very encouraging and inspiring. So I don't really know what I could add to what you know, since you knew her personally much, much better than I had the opportunity to get to know her. But I can truthfully say that from the conversations that we had, that she was a strong, strong, devoted servant of the nation and definitely a big help to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And she, of course, as I said, was an inspiration to me. That much I can tell you.
Talking about her son, you know, he told me a lot.